This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Some of the most exciting and yet reliable weather reports come from Jeff Masters and Bob Henson. Dr. Jeff Masters worked for the NOAA Hurricane Hunters as a flight meteorologist. He co-founded the Weather Underground. These days we find Jeff posting at Yale Climate Connections with his Eye on the Storm series. His Hurricane Milton update with Bob Henson warned about a catalog of dangers including torrential rains, inland floods, destructive winds, tornadoes, and a potentially catastrophic storm surge. Hurricane Milton was not just one threat, but many. Returning to Radio EcoShock, Jeff Masters, welcome back after another big one.
Hello, Alex.
It was intense television watching hurricane hunters tossed around inside their storm surveillance plane. Jeff, you had some dicey moments yourself flying with NOAA. What are they looking for, and did they find surprising numbers from Milton?
They're looking to find as much information as they possibly can using all their tools. They've got instruments mounted on the actual fuselage of the aircraft that measure pressure, temperature, winds, and humidity. They also have a Doppler radar on board, which gives you a three-dimensional view of the precipitation inside the hurricane. And they also can launch what are called drop sons, which are little parachute sensors that fall through the storm and radio back information. And for one of the first times ever, they were actually releasing little miniature drones inside Hurricane Milton. These drones flew around for 15 or so minutes and radioed back information. They're still experimental. The data isn't being ingested into the computer forecast models, but the rest of the data from the Hurricane Hunter aircraft is, and that data is critical for making accurate forecasts.
Storm experts talk about pressure in millibars and talk louder when it drops real low, real fast. The rest of us don't know what that means. What were the pressure numbers for Milton, and what do they mean?
So atmospheric pressure is typically around 1,013 millibars. And what that is, it's a measure of the weight of the air on top of you. So if you've got more air on top of you, then it weighs more and your pressure is higher. Conversely, if you don't have much air on top of you, that's low pressure and the air weighs less. So wind will blow in response to changes in pressure. So where you got a big clump of air, a mound of high pressure, right next to an area of low pressure with not as much air, the wind will blow to try and equalize the pressure, since nature abhors a vacuum. So the winds of a hurricane are directly proportional to how strong that low pressure center is in the middle of it. And so that's a very important measure of how strong a hurricane is how low that central pressure goes. And Milton's central pressure went down to 897 millibars. So that's more than 10% lower than normal atmospheric pressure. And that 10% drop really drove some extreme winds. In fact, Milton was the fifth strongest Atlantic hurricane ever measured by pressure and sixth strongest by winds, 180 mile per hour winds at its peak.
Experts say don't rely on storm levels like Cat 4 or Cat 5. Several on TV said that the storm surge is already determined out at sea, even if the hurricane weakens to Cat 3 when it hits land. How does that work?
So the storm surge, that's the water that's built up by the wind swirling around the center of the hurricane. So as the winds blow over the ocean, it puts the ocean in motion, and it spins around the center just like the winds spin around the center. So when those ocean waters get to the actual core of the hurricane, they've got nowhere to go except up or down. So in the case when the hurricane's out in the deep ocean, a lot of those waters will tend to go down and flow out towards the bottom of the ocean. But when the hurricane approaches land, now it's in shallow water. Particularly off the coast of Florida, you've got a continental shelf where the waters aren't very deep at all, just tens of meters. So that water that's forced to the center of the hurricane now cannot go down very far. And so what you get is a big bulge in the ocean surface. And that giant mound of water gets pulled with the hurricane as it makes landfall, and that creates the storm surge. It's a big bulge of water that moves ashore with the hurricane.
And then somehow it sucked out the water out of Tampa Bay for a short period of time.
Yeah, as the hurricane was approaching Tampa Bay, the counterclockwise circulation around the low was blowing offshore. And when you got wind blowing offshore, it blows the water away from shore. In fact, the water levels in Tampa Bay dropped by about 5 feet as Milton was approaching landfall.
This storm surge, it's terrifying to me, and some who witness it do not survive. Is sea level rise already adding to storm surge, or is that something to come?
Sea level along the west coast of Florida has risen by about a foot over the last 100 years, mostly due to human-caused climate change, making the oceans rise. So that extra foot adds significantly to the damage of a storm surge. We saw during Hurricane Sandy in 2012, when it hit New York City, it did about $60 billion in damage because of its storm surge. Now, we decided that about $8 billion of that $60 billion was extra that would not have occurred without human-caused sea level rise, even though it was only estimated to be on the order of 4 inches, at least what we can say confidently. So that extra 4 inches meant a lot. And that's because the infrastructure of our cities is usually built for the old climate, the climate of the 20th century, where sea levels weren't as high. And if you're going to push an extra foot of storm surge inland, that's going to overwhelm a lot of infrastructure, which was designed for a climate that no longer exists.
And weather reports from South Florida showed 4 days of heavy rain just before Milton landed. It was a different system, and I was worried the already saturated ground would add to flash flooding with the deluge. I haven't seen all the figures yet. I don't know whether that happened, but it's certainly a consideration.
Yeah, a lot of times as a hurricane's approaching, you get what's called a predecessor rain event. That's where you happen to have a front, normal, you know, cold front or warm front that lies over the continental U.S. that acts as a way to concentrate the moisture when it gets there. So we saw this with Hurricane Helene, too. As Hurricane Helene was approaching the southeast U.S., there was a front draped over the southeast part of the country, and we got about 8 to 12 inches of rain over Atlanta, North Carolina, and so on. And when the actual hurricane came, it added to that total. So, yeah, the predecessor rain events moisten the soil, make it more prone for flash flooding to occur when the actual hurricane arrives. And, of course, you're more likely to get power outages because the trees are going to uproot more easily with a wet soil there.
I'd really like to dig in with you, because I know you know these things, how these hurricanes actually work. I mean, I've heard that they cool the oceans. There's some sort of heat exchange going on there. I don't know what happens to that heat energy. Could you tell us how it works?
Hurricanes are heat engines. And what they do is they take heat coming off the ocean in the form of what we call sensible heat. I mean, it's the actual heat radiating from the ocean. And then latent heat, which is the heat energy stored in water vapor that evaporates from the ocean. So when that water vapor evaporates, it has extra energy built into it because of the extra energy it took to convert the water from liquid phase to gas phase. And then when that moisture condenses in the form of rain, it releases that heat energy. So all that heat energy goes to power the hurricane to intensify its updrafts and increase its winds. So the more heat energy available in the ocean for a hurricane, the stronger it can potentially get. But at the same time all this is going on, the hurricane's winds are actually acting to help decrease the strength of the hurricane because they're blowing the surface of the ocean, uncovering water from deeper down, which tends to be cooler. So it's kind of a self-cooling mechanism. And if a hurricane's moving very slowly, it'll choke on its own exhaust, so to speak, because the cold water upwelling underneath it will choke off the energy source that has been feeding the storm.
That's interesting, because I was going to ask you, we know hurricanes have no power to move on their own. They get blown around on their course by other wind systems, and Milton was a relatively fast-moving storm, as was Hurricane Helene. Jeff Masters, what are the advantages and disadvantages to a fast-moving hurricane versus storms that stall, like Hurricane Harvey?
A fast-moving hurricane is less prone to dump heavy rains because it's moving so quickly that the rains won't pile up to a large amount over any particular land area. Fast-moving hurricanes are disadvantageous because they tend to bring stronger winds farther inland. So we saw with the case of Hurricane Helene, It was moving about 25 miles an hour at landfall, which is fast for a hurricane. And it maintained hurricane strength 200 miles inland, well into Georgia, bringing substantial damage into that state. Now, a slow-moving hurricane will tend to dump heavier rains because it sits in one place for longer, but the winds don't go as far inland and so cause less destruction farther inland. But on the flip side of that, if it is a slow-moving hurricane, then the places where the winds do blow, they're going to get a lot more damage, because if you subject a structure to multiple hours of strong winds, it's more likely to fail compared to if you subject it to those strong winds just for like an hour or two. And with the case of Hurricane Harvey, yeah, that thing just stalled inland, just close enough to the ocean where it kept on pulling in moisture from the Gulf of Mexico, but it wasn't enough far inland to make the storm actually dissipate. So it just kind of sat there and fed and fed and fed off the ocean, dumping heavy and heavier rains all across Texas, generating up to 50 inches of rain, a U.S. record for any hurricane.
Wow. Well, scientists debate whether warming will generate more frequent hurricanes or just larger ones. Michael Mann of Penn State says either way, hurricane activity is increasing. A few big storms might serve the same energy services as many smaller ones or something like that. Do hurricanes serve a dynamic role? Do these storms have a role in nature?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the sun heats the planet unequally. I mean, the equator gets a lot more solar energy than the poles. So if there were no mechanism to carry heat from the equator to the poles would get colder and colder and the equator would get warmer and warmer. That doesn't happen because ocean currents and atmospheric winds act to redistribute heat. So hurricanes are a big part of that. They form over the tropics, and they take a lot of heat energy with them up to the mid-latitudes and then the higher latitudes. So that's an essential service that the planet needs to keep its balance so that we don't get into this state where, you know, the Arctic gets too cold and the equator gets too hot. And if we didn't have hurricanes, well, I'm not sure what we'd have. Maybe even a worse situation somehow. Certainly things would be drastically altered. Maybe ocean currents could make up for part of that deficit. Other types of storms might have to do it.
Veteran Florida meteorologist John Morales from NBC Miami was astonished to see a supercell appearing on the border of Milton, the kind of vertical wind seen in Kansas, but not in Florida, he said. Deadly tornadoes spread from massive Milton just like sparks from Crown wildfires. Lightning filled the sky hundreds of miles away from the hurricane core. Are we seeing something new?
We've never seen a tornado outbreak in Florida anywhere close to what Milton did. We have seen some tornado outbreaks that have made a lot more tornadoes than Milton, though. Milton generated about 38 tornadoes, we think, so far. There are three hurricanes in the past that have made over 100. Most of these tornadoes tend to be weak, EF0, EF1s, winds less than 100 miles per hour a lot of times. But what was unusual about Milton is we had multiple tornadoes that were, like Mr. Morales said, supercell tornadoes like you'd see in the Midwest. And I expect at least one or two of these are going to be EF2, EF3s. And EF3 is the strongest sort of intensity of tornadoes ever been recorded from a hurricane. We had an EF3 back from a 2004 hurricane, Hurricane Francis. That tornado hit South Carolina, causing damage. So very rare tornado outbreak witnessed in Florida from Milton.
What have I missed, Jeff? Is there something else that catches your attention about these storms or this hurricane season?
We've seen three of the top eight water levels on record just this year at two of our major stations that have tide gauges in Florida, both at Naples and at Fort Myers. We had Hurricane Debby, Hurricane Helene, and now Hurricane Milton all set top eight water level records at these stations. So that speaks both to how unusual it is for the west coast of Florida to get storms like this, and also to the fact that sea level rise is making it easier to set these sorts of records. Also, Milton was the fifth strongest Atlantic hurricane ever recorded, 180-mile-per-hour winds, central pressure 897 millibars. That's the kind of thing we expect to see with climate change. With a warmer ocean, in fact, a record-warm ocean like we had this year, that helped very directly to support Hurricane Milton's incredible intensity and that of Hurricane Helene just 2 weeks prior, Cat 4 storm. Record warm waters mean more Cat 4 and Cat 5 hurricanes.
From Yale Climate Connections, we have been speaking with meteorologist and confessed storm chaser Dr. Jeff Masters. Get his excellent updates at Yale Climate Connections. You can find links to follow up in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Jeff, thank you for stopping by when the world's going kind of crazy about hurricanes and typhoons.
Sure, Alex. Always happy to chat.
For Radio EcoShock, I'm Alex Smith.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.